Yesterday we read the entirety of chapter 8. And in this chapter, Maharaj Prickett asked so many questions to Sukadeva Goswami. His purpose was to hear the answers that would fill his mind with Krishna Katha. He was soon to leave this world, soon to die, and therefore he wanted his mind focused on Krishna. This is the perfection of life. The perfection of life is to live in such a way that one's mind is focused on Krishna and Krishna's service. And the perfection of leaving this world, of our death, is to die, the soul leaving the body, with mind focused in great devotion, loving devotion, again upon Krishna. In the seventh verse, the first six verses of the previous chapter, there were glorifications of the effect of hearing Krishna Katha, hearing about Krishna. And then in the seventh verse, I'll just read that sixth verse again, it's so sweet. A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has been once cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. And practically speaking, the journey out of the material world cannot be free from trouble. It is impossible. Why? Because everything that we're attached to in the realm of matter, that attachment must be broken. How can that be pleasant? How could that breaking attachment to everything, that every material conception of life, we may have been building up these conceptions for thousands and thousands and millions of births. The dust covering our heart is so thick. So those have to be broken right down to the core. The heart has to be cleansed to the core, to the full self-identification with matter. It has to be cut. So therefore, the journey must be somewhat troublesome. We can't expect it to be just roses without thorns, just the fragrance and the beauty of the rose without any thorns, without difficulties. But we've also heard that for a devotee, practically speaking, one who is actually a devotee, there are no difficulties. But yet, breaking free from material life as we aspire to become devotees is difficult. But for a devotee, svarga apavarga narakeshu apito yarta darshana. You know that verse? The heavenly planets, the hellish planets, or liberation, for a devotee it's just the same. How is that possible? Hell means suffering. Heaven means enjoyment. Liberation means freedom from both suffering and enjoyment. How can they be the same for a devotee? Because a devotee focuses his mind on Krishna. Whether he's suffering, whether he's enjoying, he's accepting everything in relationship with Krishna and continuously thinking that, Krishna, how can I serve you? This is what it means to be a devotee. Without deep devotion, one can't be a devotee by definition. This is what it means. And that thinking with devotion about Krishna deeply is so powerful that it nullifies whatever pleasure is there in swaga. Because that pleasure of thinking about Krishna touches the heart fully, deeply. And it nullifies the misery of hell, because that thinking about Krishna for a devotee nullifies that. It is so deep So therefore, we should become devotees. What else is worthy of our life? What else is worthy of our life? What else is a worthy achievement? What will we get? What else can we get that will satisfy us? So although it may be difficult, there is nothing else worthy. And then, when one actually captures the lotus feet of Krishna within his heart, and that is only done by devotion, when one devotion is the glue that makes Krishna stick in one's consciousness, and therefore it's so hard without that glue, without devotion. From now on, I'm going to always chant Hare Krishna, always think about Krishna, but it doesn't work. Because the deep devotion, the attachment isn't there. But as soon as the attachment is there, then Krishna will always be present with his devotee. So when one actually has cleansed his heart and is holding Krishna within his heart by the process of devotional service, such a person never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. He never gives them up. What will he trade? What can the world of Maya, or even the world beyond Maya of liberation, offer him to make him trade that for the lotus feet of Krishna? So they fully satisfy him, and that's the point, because serving the lotus feet of Krishna is the natural consciousness of everyone, so therefore it naturally satisfies one, just as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. So after speaking in this very sweet way, Maharaj Prickett begins to ask one question after the next, after the next, after the next. And the first question that he asks in text 7 is, how does the transcendental spirit soul acquire a material body? Will you kindly explain this? Is it by accident, or is there a cause to it? How does the soul do this? How could such an unfortunate thing happen? What is the cause? Or is it an accident? And then, in 8 and 9, he asks another question. And both these questions will be addressed in the verses we shall read today. And the question that he asks in 8 and 9 is, what is the difference between the Lord's body and Brahma's body? Or what is the difference between Krishna's body and the body of any living entity, of every living entity embodied, conditioned in this world? So those two questions in 7, 8, and 9, perhaps, if Krishna allows, we shall read Sukadeva's reply. So immediately, text 1, Atma mayam rite rajan parasyanu bhavatmanaha nargate tarta sambandha swapna drashtori vandisa. These three verses, 1, 2, and 3, go together to answer the seventh question about how the living entity, the eternal soul, acquires a material body. Second verse, I'll read the Sanskrit. Bahurupai vabati mayaya bahurupaya ramana no guleshasya mamaham iti manyate. And the third, yahi vava mahim nitsve parasmin kalamayayo rameta gatta sammohas chakvadas deta dovayam. I'll read those three verses, the English translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, and the question was about the acquisition. How did the soul acquire a material body? The soul is eternal. The body is subject to death. It disintegrates. O king, he said, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul and pure consciousness with the material body. In other words, that there is no acquisition of a material body for a pure soul. The soul doesn't have a body. It is just Maya, or the Lord's external energy, His Maya Shakti, that causes us to think that we have a body, but actually there is no relationship at all between the soul and the body. Just like I have a chatter, a piece of cloth, and I'm thinking this is mine. And therefore, if it gets ripped a little bit, oh no. Or if it gets cleaned and pressed very nicely, oh, my chatter is so nice. My. But it actually has nothing to do with me. But because of this identification, which is the subject matter of the second verse, the effect of the illusory energy, the effect of Maya, I'm thinking in terms of mine and I, and it is mine. And therefore, I'm entangled in the material world, and therefore, I have to suffer so many pleasures and so many pains that actually have nothing to do with me at all and keep me from my actual position. This is the answer of Srila Sukadev Goswami about how we acquire a material body. We don't acquire a material body. We have nothing to do with the material body. And it is just the illusory energy of the Lord that causes us to think that we have a relationship with the material body. That relationship, Srila Sukadev Goswami says, swapna drashta ivandasa, is just like a dreamer seeing his own body working. I dream so many things. Sometimes I have wonderful dreams. I fly sometimes. Are there any other flyers in the room in their dreams? Yeah. Mother Narayani's a real flyer, I bet. It's such a funny thing. The takeoffs are so amazing. I just desire to fly. And then I just lift into the air. And it is so wonderful. And I think every time, this is so easy. Now I remember how to do it. It's just so easy. All you have to do is desire to fly. And then, but it's a dream. It's just simply a dream. And sometimes I have terrifying dreams. But it's a dream. They actually don't have anything to do with me. And the analogy is given, the relationship with the body, the soul with his body, is the same as the relationship of the dreamer with his dream. Sometime because of sleep. Sleep means forgetfulness, it means ignorance, it means illusion, darkness. One forgets who one is. So sometimes, when one is dreaming, one thinks that he's flying, or one thinks he's a wealthy person, or one thinks that people are chasing him, or one thinks he's lost. And everywhere he goes, he gets further lost and can't get back. But the relationship of the dreamer to all those circumstances and the person he sees himself as doesn't exist really. As soon as he wakes up, it's gone. Just like a dreamer seeing his own body working in a dream, the whole circumstance is illusion, just caused by the Maya of sleep. We'll read Prabhupada's purport to that. Maharaj Prickett's question as to how a living being began his material life although he is apart from the material body and mind, is perfectly answered. The spirit soul is distinct from the material conception of his life, but he is absorbed in such a material conception because of being influenced by the external energy of the Lord called Atmamaya. This has already been explained in the first canto in connection with Vyasadeva's realization of the Supreme Lord and his external energy. So there's some verses in the seventh chapter of the first canto that describe this. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manyate narta tatkritam tapipadyate. And these anartas, so many things. This is the effect of Maya. And it causes so many attachments, and it causes so much pain. So much pain based on this illusion, illusory identification. It's the identification, the sense of doership, the ahankar vamudatma, kat aham, thinking that I am the doer, that causes the entanglement, that causes the pain. Just like if my chatter, again, if it gets ripped or I spill my dal on it, as I sometimes do, oh no, I think. But then, if you spill dal on your chatter, I don't care at all. There's no pain at all for me. Because there's no identification. No identification with it. It's the identification, thinking that it's mine, that causes the bondage. That's false ego's business, to make us identify with so many things that aren't us. And who are we? We are Krishna's servants. Jivera surupoi Krishna nityadas gopi bharta parakamalaya dasa dasa nadas. When we awaken that relationship, Krishna, then there is no difficulties in the material world, because we are not in the material world. So therefore a devotee, for him there is no difficulties. So this is the effect, this is the specific effect of the Lord's external energy, Maya. The external energy is controlled by the Lord, Prabhupada continues, and the living entities are controlled by the external energy, by the will of the Lord. Therefore, daiviyesha gunamayi, because the external energy, the gunamayi, the external energy is daiva. It's empowered by Krishna. No one can break out mama maya daratya. No one, regardless of how powerful he is, intelligent, strong, beautiful, anything, no one can break free from the illusory energy, because it's empowered by Krishna to keep us. Therefore, although the living entity is purely conscious in his pure state, he is subordinate to the will of the Lord in being influenced by the external energy of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, also the same thing is confirmed. The Lord is present within the heart of every living entity, and all the living entities' consciousness and forgetfulness are influenced by the Lord. We can't avoid our complete dependence on Krishna to make it conscious and willing and loving is the great challenge of life, human life. Otherwise, it's unconscious dependence, unwilling dependence, and unloving, envious dependence. This is where our choice lies, in attitude, in consciousness, not in whether we are dependent or not. Now, Prabhupada continues, the next question automatically made will be why the Lord influences the living entity to such consciousness and forgetfulness. Naturally, if we're under his control and we're either conscious of him by his will or unconscious of him by his influence, why, if it's all under his control, why does he not just bring us out like that? Why is it so difficult to get out of the illusory energy Why has he made it so difficult? Why does he influence us in that way? Why doesn't he influence us completely to just, okay, here's love of Krishna. And then you're free. Maybe I'm going to pass around a petition now and we can all sign it. Oh, prefer that way. I probably would sign it. Why the Lord influences the living entity to such consciousness and forgetfulness? The answer is that the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his pure consciousness as a part and parcel of the Lord. This is his desire. It's not his desire to keep us in Maya. He wants us to be engaged purely in his service because that is our natural position, our natural condition. As we are constitutionally made. But, because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord is. This is the problem. It is the problem and it is the glory both. We have free will. I've heard devotees say, why did Krishna give us this free will? Complaining. Because it's caused so much trouble. But actually, it is the great glory of Krishna, or a great glory of Krishna, and a great fortune that we have this. Now we just have to use it properly. And perhaps we can't immediately use it properly. Now I'm in a conditioned state. I have so many materialistic, selfish desires. And suddenly I want to jump like a train going down the track. Now I want to go in the exact opposite direction. A train can't do that. It has to gradually make its turn. And then it can go in the same direction it came from. Even though the train may like to do that, it just can't. And similarly, for most of us, we can't make that type of a turn. When we're first chanting, we think it's going to be like that, perhaps. But it isn't. We go gradually. And as we turn away from the direction of Maya and turn towards Krishna, that taste comes to us. And the taste of Maya, we see it gradually for what it is. There's so much suffering. It's like the camel eating thorns. What an incredible example. He's thinking the thorns taste good. But thorns, they're thorny. They're cutting his tongue continuously. They're giving him pain, and he's tasting the salty taste of his own blood. He's cutting himself, and he's thinking, oh, so wonderful. This is every materialistic endeavor. Materialistic means self-centered, causes this type of pleasure at the cost of our life. So we do nevertheless turn slowly and gradually, or quickly if we are extremely fortunate, we make that turn and turn away from the materialistic false ego's plans to the loving service of Krishna. But it's free will. At any time, if we so desire, we can drop away. We can turn in the exact opposite direction. We can turn away from Krishna. We can. Don't doubt this. If you want to, if I want to, I can. But Krishna is very kind also. So if one has made an attempt to catch him, feeble as it is, and immature as it may be, even if we try to turn from him, even if we try to forget him and let go of him, he, being so merciful, will not let go of his devotee, even though the devotee may be in an immature state. He won't let us go. But yet we can try if we so desire. It's not that this is the recommendation, but we have our independence, just to make that point. So, because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord. Or we may have our own mixtures of how much we want to serve and how much we want to be the center and the enjoyer. So all the non-devotees, living entities, are desirous to becoming equally as powerful as the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. Why? Why aren't the living entities why are they not fit to become as powerful as the Lord? Yes, parts of him. Not meant to be.
All the power comes from the Lord.
Yeah, all the power comes from the Lord, yeah. Yes. Unavoidable. We're tiny and insignificant. We can dream. Yes, I am God, just like I'm dreaming I'm flying by the influence of sleep. But does that mean I'm actually flying? If I'm dreaming I'm the king, does that mean I'm the king? No. And as soon as I wake up, it's clear. So that's the effect of Maya. That type of illusion that fills us with the idea that I could become anything I want. I'm all powerful. I'm the greatest. I am the center of everything. Everyone in the material world is in this illusion. And therefore, when the world doesn't work the way we want it to work, we become angry, we become frustrated. When we try to control everything, we're in complete anxiety because we're simply tiny and insignificant. And in illusion, we're thinking other than that. And we become angry at people because their illusion is that they're the center. And my illusion is that I'm the center. Well, actually, of course, neither of us are the center. Krishna is the center. Like a person who thinks of becoming a king without possessing the necessary qualification. When the living entity desires to become the Lord himself, he is put into a condition of dreaming that he's the king. Therefore, the first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. That is called envy. It springs. Krishna bhule se jeev, forgetting Krishna. Anadi. When did it happen? Forever it didn't happen. We've been in the material world, practically speaking. Time immemorial, Prabhupada will translate that as. Bahiyamu. Turn thou back, forgetting Krishna. Krishna bhule se jeev. And thus dreams, he forgets his factual life, and thus dreams of the land of utopia, where he may become one with the Lord. So that's what exactly what the material world is. Every conditioned soul, whether he's a human or an animal, is dreaming that he is the center. We may not be dreaming that I'm all powerful, but we're dreaming that I am the center. And this is called illusion or Maya. And that's naturally, there's conflict continuously because everyone is having the same dream except that they are the center. I'm thinking I'm the center. You're thinking you're the center. You're thinking you're the center. You're thinking you're... So of course we're going to conflict. Because it's all dream. It's all illusion. And here's an example. The child, and I'm going to ask you to explain this example, so listen to it carefully. The child cries to have the moon from the mother, and the mother gives the child a mirror to satisfy the crying and disturbing child, the crying and disturbing child with the reflection of the moon. Explain that. How does that fit in? What is the example? Child is crying and wants the moon. And the mother gives the child a mirror. Vaishnavibhyo namo namah. Did you raise your hand or? No, okay. Do you want to answer? I can't hear you because. Yes, the child wants the moon because it looks like butter, maybe. And he wants the butter of the moon. And? So the mother says, okay, I'll give you the moon. And what does the mother give him? Krishna wants it, yes. But that's a different example. Yes, Paul. Can he have the moon? And what's the parallel? Yes, we want to be the center of existence. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, then just imagine anything you think would happen. Just imagine how much trouble you would get into quickly. We can't be God. We can't be Krishna any more than the child can possess the moon. But he wants it. So what does the mother do? Here's a mirror. And look in the mirror. There's the moon. It's all yours. The mirror is reflection or illusion. Does he really have the moon? No. So we have a reflection here in the material world of the moon. Like the moon. The reflection is that in my particular mirror, my illusion, I can think. I have the grace of thinking that I am the center. I am the supreme. I am the star of the show. But everyone is thinking that. I once walked into a professor's office. This was like 20, almost 30 years ago, and I saw a little sign on his desk that affected me very deeply, and it actually changed how I thought about life. Would you like to hear what it said? Would you like to hear? It said, I used to worry about what people were thinking about me. And that happens when you walk into a room and, oh, what's everyone thinking about me? And the sign continued, until I realized that no one was thinking about me. Everyone was thinking about themselves. And it's true. Everyone is worrying. What is everyone thinking about me? Yes. And that's why we wonder why Krishna isn't merciful to us and just bring us back to the spiritual world is because we can't be there. We can't be there with this consciousness. We just can't be there because Krishna is the center. Just as Prabhu said, we'll just be thinking about ourselves, and we'll get very frustrated and angry because everyone else is thinking about Krishna, something like that. We can't be in Goloka Vrindavan yet until we, like Narottama Das Thakur says, he compares the consciousness of a devotee to gold purified 100 times in flames. That's how the impurities of gold are removed. You put it in touch with the flame, the fire, a hot fire, and the impurities come to the top and then they're removed. And then do it again. So the grossest impurities are removed, and then the less gross, and the less, and again and again and again, until the pure soul is free from all material contamination and loves Krishna. Then, when we're in that consciousness, then we can go. Then we are actually back there. Then we're awake. Just like in the dream. Not only do I fly, I get lost sometimes in my dreams. Do other people get lost too? Yeah. Yes, you get lost too? Yes? You? No, you don't get lost. You crash. I start walking. I go to get something innocent, and then I afterwards make a right turn, and then I can't remember whether I should go left or right to get back. Then I go that way, and suddenly I can't find where I am, and the more I wander, the more confused I get. Just like that's what entering the material world is like, and we get completely lost, confused about who we are and how to get back. But gradually, gradually, gradually. So what's the process of getting back? It's waking up. And then you're immediately back. It's not retracing your steps, going to a psychiatrist to retrace everything that one happened, then you fix it and go back. How many lives will you have to go back? Unlimited. The process is waking up. I no longer want the moon. I want to serve the moon. Chaitanya Chandra, Krishna Chandra. I am just a tiny servant. Is that hard to accept? No? Yes. Deeply, deeply, deeply. It's easy to do it. It's easy to understand, hard to do. Hard to practice, because one needs complete sincerity. So that happens gradually, and sometimes, okay, I want to enjoy, and then we can count on it, that it's because it's not possible for us to be the center, the enjoyer. So gradually, gradually, we may turn to Krishna. Utopia, when Prabhupada uses the word utopian, he means something that doesn't truly cannot exist in that way. It just exists in a dream. Just like one time, one devotee wrote Prabhupada a letter and said that in the temple that he was in charge of, he wants to make it so that there's no fighting and everyone just loves each other. And Prabhupada said, that is utopian. It can't happen like that. Why? Because this is the material world. When I used to teach Gurukula, there would always be like a few children who really, really gave me trouble. And you're dreaming. Only if you get rid of those three or four or one or two, then everyone would be real. But it's like some magic or something. As soon as you do get rid of them, there's immediately, boing, there's something else. Someone comes to give you, because this is the material world. We have to, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura said that if one who has accepted the principle that it's not possible to be happy in the material world, such a person has taken the greatest step towards self-realization, he said. So even after understanding this, we may have tendencies. Then the art of living in the material world with some material tendencies is to how to use, to minimize our material entanglement, and use whatever we have, whatever material situations that we require, so that they bring us closer to Krishna and not push us further away. Similarly, the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world, to lord it over as karmi, and to give up and to give this up in frustration to become one with the Lord. Both these stages are dreaming illusions only. Now, for all of you who wish to know when this happened, that we turned our back on Krishna, there is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this. So if one wants to find out, despite the fact that there's no necessity, we wish them luck. But the fact is that as soon as he desired it, he was put under the control of Atmamaya by the direction of the Lord. Therefore, the living entity in his material condition is dreaming falsely that this is mine and this is I. And this is the subject matter of the next verse of these three verses. The effect of this type of illusion, the dream. The dream is that the conditioned soul thinks of this material body as I, or falsely thinks that he is the Lord and that everything is in connection with that material body is mine. Thus, only in dream does the misconception of I and mine persist life after life. This continues life after life, as long as the living entity is not purely conscious of his identity as a subordinate part and parcel of the Lord. In other words, that desire. So now we have the desire and the fortune to want to be devotees. That desire has to become like a raging fire in our heart, missing Krishna. And Maya will present us with so many mirrors according to our conditioning. Certain one mirror or another, one illusion or another will be attractive to us. So one within whose heart the flame is burning brightly of love for Krishna, he will not accept the mirror as the moon, the illusion as the reality. But one who is not so Krishna conscious, he will always accept something other than the real thing. He has to. And that way he will learn. Because Krishna will help him always. In his pure consciousness, however, there is no such misconceived dream. And in that pure conscious state, the living entity does not forget that he is never the Lord, but that he is eternally the servitor of the Lord in transcendental love. And that fully satisfies him. Text 2. So in the dream, what is the effect? Bahurupa, many, 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 many forms, Ivavati, are manifested. Mayaya, by the influence of the external energy, Bahurupaya. In so many forms, he imagines himself. He identifies basically with his body. Ramamano Guneshvasya, and he's trying to enjoy that which is produced by the modes of material nature. And using the mirror example again, how frustrating it is to try to eat, enjoy that which is within the mirror, the food that seems to be present in the mirror, how much enjoyment we get from it. The more we try to enjoy it, the more frustrated we become. Mamaham, and this is how he's thinking, iti manyate. I and mine, this is mine, this is I, and this is, I am this body, I'm a turtle, I'm a fish, I'm a frog, I'm a mosquito, I'm a human. So many qualities identify with, but they have nothing to do with me, it's all in the illusion. And this is mine. So as Prabhupada explains in his purport, for the Kami, the people who have more passion, they are very attached to mine. It is mine. It is mine. Everything from my country to my piece of land to my cheddar to my this to my that. Mine. And if anyone tries to take that which is mine, I will kill them. And people don't kill each other over something. Oh, they get into a... Someone takes something of another's and then the person... He even thought it's his own. And he takes it. Then they get angry. This is mine. And the anger increases due to kama. Then krodha, kama, esha, krodha. And they kill it. They kill each other. This happens all the time. We'll read a little bit from Prabhupada's purport about a third of the way.
The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires, and the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. The tiger wanted to enjoy the blood of another animal, and therefore, by the grace of the Lord, the material energy supplied him the body of a tiger with facilities for enjoying blood from another animal. Similarly, a living entity desiring to get the body of a demigod in a higher planet can also get it by the grace of the Lord, if one desires. It all depends on one's desire. And if he is intelligent enough, he can desire to get a spiritual body. But that desire, if one actually wants a spiritual body, has to be blazing. To enjoy the company of the Lord, and he will get it. Chatra loyam api mulam ikalam. Loyam, desire, intense desire, is the one price to go back to the spiritual world. Agreed. Tatila loyam apimuyam ikalam. Janmakoti sukritarna labyate. But that doesn't come cheaply or easily. So many janmakoti, thousands of births, it may take for one to acquire that intense greed. So the minute freedom of the living entity can be fully utilized, and the Lord is so kind that he will award the living entity the same type of body he desires. So what situation do you want? Thinking that it will make you happy. We all have those things hidden in the heart. What I want, actually, I'm performing devotional service, I'm giving Bhagavad, but actually there's something hidden in there that I'm trying to get out of it. So those have to be burnt to ashes. Niharam iva baskaram. Like the sun, he dissipates the fog naturally. When the son of Krishna, Kechit Kevalaya Bhakta, by pure devotional service, then naturally. The living entity's desiring is like dreaming of a golden mountain. A person knows what a mountain is, he knows what gold is, and out of his desire only he dreams of a golden mountain. And when the dream is over, he sees something else in his presence. He finds in his awakened state there is neither gold nor a mountain. What to speak of a golden mountain? It was illusion only. And the power of the mind, when the mind grasps at something, when it desires something, it wants something, it is so tricky. It will imagine whatever it wants. And the whole advertising game is just for this. Convince you that this is what you want, and if you have this, it'll be happy. And the mind grabs it, and it grabs it, and it won't let it go until it gets it, and it's been tricked again. And the soul remains dissatisfied. But, so there is the full state of the living entity that was described in the first two verses, but the third verse describes something different. Freedom from illusion. As soon Yarhi Vavam Himni Sre Parasmin Kalamayo Ramita Gatasamo as Chakfudaste Tadolayam. As soon as the living entity becomes situated in its constitutional glory and begins to enjoy the transcendence beyond time and material energy, enjoys his relationship with Krishna, situated in that, he at once gives up the two misconceptions of I, of life, I and mine, and thus becomes fully manifested as the pure self. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, the two misconceptions of life, namely I and mine, are verily manifested in two classes of men. In the lower state, the conception of mine is very prominent. It is mine, mine. I'm just trying to increase what is mine and mine.
And in the higher state, more in the mode of goodness, less in passion, the misconception of I is prominent. I. To the stage of ultimately identifying I as everything. And that's the jnani's misconception. Aham brahmasmi. I am that one. In the animal state of life, the misconception of mine is perceivable. Even the category of cats and dogs. Do you see this with the dogs? The perception of mine? How do they perceive what's mine? I could write a book about how the dogs do that right now, and monkeys too. Yes, you have. Really? Yeah. Yes, how does the dog... No, not thinking of it as mine, but even a dog... Yeah. Yeah, or especially... Yeah, in Vrindavan, it's incredible. The whole of Vrindavan is divided into dog territories. And if a dog from a different neighborhood comes around, it's heavy. They'll kill them. All the dogs of that territory gang up on them. It's true, isn't it? Huh? Yes, the people dogs too, yes? Once a person, a householder, went to Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj and said that very happily they had purchased some land in Sri Mayapur Dham. And Gaurakishordas Babaji told them, with all the money in this world, you cannot purchase one grain of sand here. What is yours? You've purchased it. What is yours? In the lowest stage of human life, the same misconception is also prominent in the shape of, it is my body, it is my house, it is my family, it is my caste, it is my nation, it is my country, and so on. And in the higher stage of speculative knowledge, the same misconception of mind is transformed into I am. It is all I am. So hum. Tattvamasi. There are many classes of men comprehending the same misconceptions of I and mine in different colors, but the real significance of I can be realized only when one is situated in the consciousness of I am the eternal servant of the Lord. That is the real identity. This is pure consciousness. And the whole Vedic literatures teach us this conception of life. So a devotee thinks that I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. This is actually the thinking of the devotee. Krishna is my wealth. Krishna is everything for me. He is mine. In Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, what is prominent is thinking that I am Krishna's or I am Narayan's. And that is prominent. And in Goloka Vrindavan, the concept of mamata is prominent, of what is mine. Krishna is mine. Even more prominent than I am Krishna's, the devotees in Vrindavan think Krishna is mine. Mamata. But that can't be imitated until one is exalted, until the train of our material life is going in the opposite direction. It cannot be imitated. So what is the process of removing both these misconceptions, which are the essence of the illusory energy's effect on the living entity? And also this text 4 will also answer
the 288, the question asked by Brahma, what is the difference between the Lord's position and the living entity? And in text 4, O King, the personality of Godhead, he's now changing and answering the next question. Being very much pleased with Lord Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance in Bhakti Yoga, presented his eternal and transcendental form before Brahma, and that is the objective goal for purifying the conditioned soul. This is the process, to please Krishna. And if somehow or another we please Krishna, Bhagavad Dharma again, we please Krishna, then by his grace he presents himself to the devotee. And when Krishna presents himself to the devotee, then the devotee can see him. And therefore Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, as Srila Prabhupada would quote, don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Now there's a comment by Srila Sridhar Swami. He comments that the living entity, on the third verse, the one we just read about becoming fully manifest in his actual consciousness, that the verse states that the living entity can give up illusion and attain the ultimate bliss by devotional service. I'm going to have to speed up quite a bit here. So now the topic is going to change. How Brahma actually pleased the Lord and what the result of that pleasure is. This, I had it noted that let this fourth purport, the first half of it, should be read. So please, please again, thank you very much for reading the purports that Srila Prabhupada has given such important information. So how did Brahma attain the Lord's pleasure, by which the Lord actually presented his form before him? So text 5. And I'll read the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami after. Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe, could not trace out the source of his lotus seat, because he was born from the lotus flower growing from the navel of Govardhakshay Vishnu. So Brahma, and this will be described in more detail later on, and also it will be described in the third canto especially. Lord Brahma tried to trace out, to find out where he came from, because he was upon a lotus, there was no one else there. So he traced out the stem of the lotus, but he could not find the source. We cannot, by our own power, find our source, our ultimate source, which is Krishna. No matter how hard we try, no matter how qualified we are, we cannot, it is impossible. Rather, we will hit terror. That's actually what will happen. I won't describe that too much in detail, but that's what happens. We will hit the point of understanding our false ego, and then when we don't understand, when we get close to understanding that we are not this falseness, false identity, terror comes to the heart. Because there is no positive identity understanding of who one is. So that, through one's own power, the process of understanding one's identity through one's own power, as Brahma attempted, is not what's recommended. But rather, what is recommended is the process of devotional service by which Krishna reveals himself. That is the process to understand our source. So Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe, could not trace out the source of his lotus seat. And while thinking of creating the material world,
He could not understand the proper direction for such creative work, nor could he find out the process of such creation. Prabhupada explains just at the end of this purport to 5. Even the first spiritual master of the universe was enlightened by the grace of the Lord. So who else can attain perfect knowledge of everything without the mercy of the Lord? If anyone desires to seek perfect knowledge of everything, he must seek the mercy of the Lord, and there is no other means. To seek knowledge on the strength of one's personal attempt is a sheer waste of time. So Brahma began he was confused and bewildered as how he could understand how to create, where he came from, what he was supposed to do. And while thus engaged in thinking, this is text 6, in the water, Brahma heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabet of the consonants. And those syllables, the 16th, if one can check, if one doesn't not familiar with the Devanagari characters, one can check at the back of every volume of the Bhagavatam. In my version, it's on page 669, the alphabet, the Devanagari alphabet, and the 16th consonant is ta, and the 21st just below it is pa. Tapa, austerity. He heard this divine command, which was Krishna's mercy upon him, telling him what to do. He joined them together, and he understood them as the wealth of the renounced order of life. Tapa, tapasya. What does tapasya mean? Austerity, or actions that will please the Lord. Taking oneself out of the center and acting in such a way that the Lord will be pleased. That is tapasya. Text 7. When he heard the sound, he tried to find the speaker, searching on all sides. But when he was unable to find anyone beside himself, he thought it wise to sit down on his lotus seat firmly and give his attention to the execution of penance as he was instructed. Lord Brahma underwent penance for 1,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. He heard this transcendental vibration from the sky, and he accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses, and the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entities. Thus he is known as the greatest of all ascetics. These purports really should be read. The personality of Godhead, being very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. So one has to act to please Krishna. This is the instruction. And then, when Krishna desires, by his grace, he reveals himself to the devotee, when he is pleased with the devotee. So when Brahma pleased Krishna by his non-deceptive penance, what does that mean, non-deceptive penance? Yes. No pretension. So what does that mean? What more about that? Sincere, yes. Sincerely enacted to please Krishna. That is what purity is. Sincerity is our advancement. Perhaps when we perform devotional service, our sincerity is mixed with other desires. So until our devotional service is anya vilasita sanyam jnana kamarana vritana kalena krishnana shilanam, it will not be pleasing to Krishna. Until it is pure, it will not be pleasing to Krishna. And thereby Krishna won't
reciprocate fully by showing himself and his abode to us. Non-deceptive, with no other motive other than to please Krishna. And that is what Brahma did. It wasn't the austerities, the penances in and of themselves. It was his devotion in trying to please Krishna as Krishna had asked him to perform tapasya. So he did that to please Krishna. And then what did Krishna do? He revealed his own abode. Okay, I'm going to stop here. So on one side, there is the illusion with ourselves in the center. On the other side, there is the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. One side, the mirror, the material world, the reflection. On the other side, the spiritual world. And we have freedom. Not complete freedom, but we can take steps towards Krishna according to our personal capacity. That we can always do. And Krishna will reciprocate. When I first started chanting, I heard that Krishna reciprocates. If we take one step to Krishna, how many steps does Krishna take to us? Huh? 100, huh? 10, 100, I've heard many things. Maybe 1,000. You've heard 1,000 too? Yes. I heard, I think, 10. 10 when I first died, but it's increased. We need more mercy from Krishna. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? So we should take steps to Krishna. That's the point. That he what? Celestial years of the demigods. So many years. A long time. There's figures that we can, if anyone knows those, how 6 months, 6 months of our time is 1 day of the demigods, if I remember correctly. And then there's a night. Huh? 500. So if you take 1 day, and that's what it's based on, that calculation that's there. 1 year of our time is a day and night of the demigods, one complete year. Because that 6 months is a day, and then there's the night. Yes. Yes. Yes.
But at that moment, creation did not exist, so there are no sense objects. So, which consisted in that sense control, there are no sense objects.
But the gross creation didn't exist. But the subtle universal form existed. So the mind is created of the mode of goodness mixed with mode of ahankar. So he was a complete person. So maybe it wasn't fully gross. Could ask the question one more time.
If there is not a credibility sense, what is the meaning of sense control?
Focused. He focused his mind upon the Lord. That still requires attention. Anyone else like to try with this one? Yes. Yes. Lord Brahma controlled his two grades of senses by means of sense perception and sense organs, because he had to engage such senses in the execution of the order of the Lord. Therefore, controlling the senses means engaging them in the transcendental service of the Lord.
The Lord's order descends in disciplic succession through the bona fide spiritual master. And thus execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is factual control of the senses. Such execution of penance in full faith and sincerity made Brahmaji so powerful that he became the creator of the universe. And because he was able to attain such power, he is called the best amongst the tapasis. So, is that enough, or actually, or not? Because you're basically, what you asked is that there were no sense objects manifest. Yes? Because the universe wasn't manifest. So he had it easy in that sense. Is that basically what you were saying? Because the mind... So it's... And also the Lord spoke to him directly, telling him what to do. So in that sense, it was also easy for him. Yes? And there was no one to talk to because he was the only one there. In that sense, it was easy for him. So how does one get it easy like that? That's the question. We want to take something that's easy. We can look at it from that point of view. So he had so much piety. He had so much piety because one doesn't become Brahma without getting incredible piety. Sometimes there's, when there's not a living entity who has so much piety, Krishna himself has to come to perform the position, the activities of Brahma. So Brahma, whatever easiness he had or facility he had, he earned through countless births of piety. So I can't exactly answer your question, but I can answer, pull from it a lesson that if we see someone who has it easy or seems to be very quickly advanced, we can understand that it's because they've earned it at a previous time. Some people, they become immediately attracted to Krishna and don't have troubles like possibly I have or something like that. And this is because in previous lives they've paid in a different way. They've gone through all the processes. And it's also interesting that although Prabhupada speaks here about in this section, that the Lord revealed to him the Vaikuntha planets, later on he's going to say, Prabhupada will explain in a purport, and Jiva Goswami explains this, that actually Krishna reveals to him his form as Shyama Sundar. And he quotes the Garga Upanishad, I believe, to show this point. So how fortunate is Lord Brahma that Shyama Sundar himself came before him and revealed not just Vaikuntha, but Goloka Vrindavan. So what does that take? What fortune does that take? This takes incredible previous bhakti. Perhaps that's the best I'm going to be able to do with that question. Thank you. Yes, Mataji. You're going to have to speak. In devotion, with devotion. It wasn't just the austerities, it was the devotion. He kept what? This was his service. And that's how Prabhupada brings it in the last purport, in that paragraph that we just read. He had a service to do. He was born to do this, to create the universe. Look at his birth. And he was infused with this desire, so Krishna reciprocates with that and allows him to do that. But yet, that desire was also coming from Krishna. This is his service. And every day he gets to see Krishna. This is his service. So it's a compassionate service too. Is there a reason that it's the same? Because it's the same energy, but when it's reflected into the material world. So a great devotee, and this will come out it comes out in many places, but the same act is perceived, like when Duryodhan was chastising Vidura. So Duryodhan was under the influence of the external energy, but Vidura saw it as the internal energy. He saw Krishna working through it. So for one who is exalted, there is only the internal energy. But reflected through envy and forgetfulness of Krishna and false ego, it's the external energy. Same energy. Because ultimately that energy is Srimati Radharani. Yes. Correct. But for all practical purposes, it's the lotus is in the water, so he's thinking as if he's in the water. Just like if someone is on a surfboard and you see him out there, you say, oh, he's in the water. Where is he? He's in the water. So although he's on the lotus, he's in the... Yes, so that's your answer. Why did he still create the material world? This is Krishna's desire ultimately, because without the material world, how would living entities progress from just animalistic existence to spiritual existence? So that's, we could say it's Krishna's desire, we can say it's Brahma's mercy. Either way. Other questions or comments? Mataji? Compared to spiritual. Yes, but yes, we end up speaking about that again and again, that demigods, Lord Brahma, their position is completely different from ours. We can't imagine it. If we try to project our understanding of what it would be like to be Lord Brahma and imagine, well, for me, if I was sitting there on the lotus, how peaceful it would be, because I wouldn't have to control my senses, because there would be no amplifiers and music around, or whatever particularly we happen to be attracted to. So Lord Brahma is not in that position. He has a completely subtle existence. But yet, the point being that he still focused his, whatever he was, the water, the Garbhadak ocean was there, the lotus was there. So he pulled his, and his first attempt was to go down into the lotus and see his source. So still he had to extract his consciousness from all of those type of desires to understand things by that methodology, and he had to focus his consciousness in meditation upon the Lord. So one could also ask, well, how did he focus it on Krishna if the only information he got was tapa, austerity? But yet, his consciousness isn't easy. It's impossible, actually, for us to understand. Yes. 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 He focused on the mantra. Yes. It's not mentioned here. Yes. But it's... And the mantra is the Kama Gayatri. And this was his. It's also considered his initiation. It's described in different ways in different places too. So in this way, he was initiated by the Lord directly. It's also described. Prabhupada says that in the purport. So the focus was his controlling. Okay. Last question. Not at the end of day, during his one day, which is very long, Krishna comes every day he appears in every universe every day. So long. Too long. We heard about the years of the demigods. If you look in the third keto, it describes, I can't remember the chapter number, where calculation of time from the atom, somewhere in there, it describes the length of Lord Brahma's day. But it's really, really long. But to him, it just feels like a day. He lives 100 years. So every day, he gets a visit from Lord Krishna. He dies. But he doesn't die and just take another body. He can transfer himself to the spiritual world. He's so exalted. Would you like to be Lord Brahma? Okay. Because one can become Lord Brahma, but it's not easy. I wouldn't recommend it for you as a good career option. Career track, no. It can be, and it's things like that have been said. Well, if we've been Brahma and we are not now in the spiritual world, we can assume that just by inference. At any time, we can desire improperly. And this isn't every Brahma every time. This is a Brahma that this happens to. Fruitive, even though so pious. Maybe he wants something. Maybe he really likes to control and enjoy. He likes that feeling of being in control and the creator. And when there's a problem, everyone comes to him. You know that? You know when? Have you ever been in that situation? There's a certain satisfaction when people come to you when they have problems. Yes, that kind of mentality, to be so much in control and you're the one who everyone comes to, can land you in the material world when you want to get pleasure from that. But rather than that, whatever position we have, we should do it in pure devotion, just for Krishna's pleasure, and make sure we don't get entangled in any false ego gratification for ourselves, but just try to please Krishna, and then we'll escape from having to go into the material world. Is there time? Look for yourself. Yes, you've answered the question yourself. But can you can ask me later sometime, or you can ask so many other people too. But it's late for me, at least. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.